Hi, I'm Ryan Flaherty, Senior Director of Performance at Nike. I train some of the world's best athletes, like Russell Wilson, Marcus Mariota, and Serena Williams. At Nike, we believe that greatness isn't born, it's trained. And training is more than just a workout. Each episode will bring you a conversation with a leading expert in what we call the five facets of training: movement, recovery, sleep, nutrition, and mindset. Today, we're exploring the relationship between sleep and success. You're listening to Trained, presented by Nike.
Everything we're saying, it's for people who want to be productive, to achieve, to succeed, but do it in a sustainable and joyful way. You know, we have one life. Our life should not just be about getting things done. It should also be about bringing joy and fulfillment and happiness into our lives and our relationships. And if we don't do that, I don't think we're really succeeding.
That's Arianna Huffington, founder of the Huffington Post and the CEO and founder of Thrive Global. In 2016, Arianna left the Huffington Post to start Thrive Global, a behavior change, media, and technology company helping individuals, companies, and communities improve their well-being and performance. Today, we're going to hear from Arianna Huffington about her relationship with sleep and wellness. But there was something else I was struck by during our conversation: how completely present she was. We recorded this episode in Arianna's office at Thrive Global in downtown Manhattan, and it felt exactly how you'd imagine a New York media startup would feel. There were a ton of people running around. The company was actually launching a brand new product that day, and it felt like controlled chaos. But despite all that, Arianna was totally locked into our conversation. She didn't look at her phone once, wasn't distracted at all by what was going on outside of her office. She was right there. And that's something I see with my elite athletes all the time. The ones who really excel at the absolute highest level have learned to master being present. And not just in the gym or on the field. They are present the rest of their lives too. In phone conversations, with fans, with their families. They're the kind of people who remember your dog's name. For my younger athletes who aren't there yet, we're constantly talking about being present and working on mindfulness. Because the more you research and learn about what it takes to be great, the more you realize that all people at that level, whether they're athletes or business people or politicians, have found a way to be present in all aspects of their lives. That's why I'm so excited for you guys to hear from Arianna, and that's coming up next. My guest today is Arianna Huffington. Throughout our conversation, you're going to hear some background noise. That's because, as I mentioned earlier, we met at the Thrive Global offices in New York City, where we talked about how she, as a young girl growing up in a small apartment in Athens, became one of Cambridge University's most successful alumni, and why she transitioned from the world of journalism to the field of sleep and wellness research. We then deep dive into how she has cultivated a healthier, sustainable relationship to technology and nutrition. So I wanted to start with, you know, I think it's well documented that you had an accident while you're working at the Huffington Post and hurt yourself due to exhaustion, which has kind of led you to where you are today with Thrive. Can you just talk about kind of at what point did that shift happen for you, whether it was a week later or a month later after the accident, to where you kind of dedicated your life and your mission and your passion around wellness and sleep?
Can we still call it an accident if it's self-inflicted?
Sure, yeah.
So it was 2007, 2 years into building the Huffington Post, and I thought I could work round the clock, literally sacrifice myself to be a good mother and a great founder, you know, building a startup. Mm-hmm. And on April 6, 2007, I was at my desk, and I got up because I was called to get a sweater, and I hit my head on my desk, broke my cheekbone. And as I came to in a pool of blood and nobody had shot me, it was the beginning of this journey of new awareness. And literally at the end of this 2 weeks of tests, a doctor with a kind of dry sense of humor said to me, "You have what a Belgian philosopher called civilization's disease, burnout, and you have to change your life." And And that was the beginning of my changing my life. And I began with sleep. And, you know, if you go back to 2007, sleep was was held in contempt. Mm-hmm. You know, very successful people bragging that they don't need any sleep, competing, who gets up earlier, and basically ignoring the science. Mm-hmm. For a long time, we've known that exercise and movement is one pillar of health. Nutrition is the second pillar of health. But we're ignoring the third pillar of health, which is sleep, mm-hmm. and how the three come together. I call them like the three legs of a stool. You can't just do your life on just two legs.
What does your sleep routine look like? I mean, do you have something you keep very tight, like a schedule you keep every single day? What is it that you've changed?
Not a schedule in terms of going to bed the same night, the same time. I think that's very hard for my life, and I think the life of most of us. But again, based on the science, unless you have a genetic mutation, and about 1 to 1.5% of the population does, so it's a real thing. If you have a genetic mutation, you don't need a lot of sleep. So if you're getting 3 or 4 hours and you feel great, good for you. You have a genetic mutation. And those of us who don't have a genetic mutation, which is the vast majority of people walking this earth, need 7 to 9 hours. Where you are in the spectrum of 7 to 9 is individual. Mm-hmm. So I'm an 8-hour girl. Like if I get 8 hours, I'm like, bring it on. If I had not, it would be another thing to cross off my to-do list. And right. I lived my life for too long like that. So there was much less joy in my life, as well as less productivity, less creativity, mm-hmm. etc. But also, how many people do you know and who just go through their day, literally, getting things off their to-do list?
Majority of us, I think.
Yeah.
But a lot of the athletes I work with, they still struggle with making the change, though, even though they know how important it is for them and how big it is.
I think the example of athletes is very profound. We do a lot of media around athletes and sleep, recharging,
right.
Rest, recovery, because people can see clearly these are amazing elite athletes looking for an additional competitive edge because they want to increase the chances of having an amazing game.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, and then I think they understand that the difference between them and everybody else are such small percentages that they need everything they can get.
Exactly.
But it's funny because we don't do that as people who work in other fields. We don't even look at our own sleep to kind of, you know, point to maybe why we're not, you know, getting to where we want to get in our life.
Sleep, as I said, is one factor. Another is our relationship with our phones. You know, the way people become addicted to their phones, we become endlessly distracted by our phones. Phones interrupt our recharging time, our sleep. So Philipp Schindler, who is the chief business officer at Google, wrote a piece about his moment of epiphany when he, on a Saturday morning, told his children, Daddy's taking to the playground, he has young children, he had been traveling, and his 5-year-old said, oh no, can't the babysitter take us? And he was kind of crestfallen and said, why? And the little boy said, because when you're in the playground, you're always on your phone. And that was his moment of epiphany when he decided not to be on his phone in front of his children. So we bring a lot of storytelling from very successful people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So that the rest of the world can have a sense that they have permission mm-hmm. to live their lives differently.
You know, coming from your background at Huffington Post and a lot of what you guys did at Huffington Post, where it was lots of news, lots of articles, lots of content coming, streaming all the time, with your new kind of venture and Thrive, where it's kind of unplugging and separating from your technology and your phone, the kind of juxtaposition of the two worlds that are now coming together for you, is there a part where you feel like it's going against what you kind of initially started with Huffington Post to kind of change that culture of always on news? Or is it for you just teaching people that boundaries with what is available with the technology out today?
Oh, absolutely. The second, I mean, what we are saying is set your boundaries. Of course you're going to read the news. Don't read the news during dinner with your family.
Yeah, yeah.
The truth of the matter, Ryan, you know that, is that there is never a day when I can say, I've done everything I could have done today. They're always in completions.
Yeah.
And anybody who has an interesting job always is left with incompletions at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I tell people, if you don't have incompletions at the end of the day, I suggest you change jobs because your job is not challenging and interesting enough.
Yeah.
So for me, turning off my phones and charging them outside my bedroom is like it's an arbitrary decision. This is the end of my day.
Why do you think this awareness is coming about right now? What is it about today that you feel like this is all coming to a head?
I think two things. One, when it comes specifically to sleep, the science of sleep is relatively young. But the second reason is that the casualties of the delusion under which we've been living have been proliferating. There are more and more people suffering from diabetes, heart disease, mental problems like depression, anxiety, and all these things are connected to burnout.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a combination of the casualties and all the new science that is so conclusive, and also more and more successful people coming forward talking about how they use meditation to help them succeed.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, it's been. It's kind of like having its moment in the light, which leads a little bit to now where we're at with you with Thrive. I mean, after leaving Huffington Post 2 years ago, you've founded Thrive. Can you talk a little bit about what exactly you guys are looking to do? What vision you have for what Thrive's going to do to help, you know, the world understand how to sleep better? But also, I think you have plans for a lot broader as well in health and wellness.
Oh yes. Now the company has very ambitious goals. The goal is basically to disrupt the way we work and live. To change the way we work and live so that we go from surviving to thriving. And we do it in two main ways. One is B2B. We go into corporations and work to shift the culture and show the connection between well-being, performance, and the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part of the company is a media platform where we bring together the latest science, storytelling through these new role models, as we call them, that I've been mentioning, and ancient wisdom, because I think ancient wisdom is also very important, because ancient wisdom is now validated by modern science that there is a better way to live.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, it's really about helping people be the best versions of themselves.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Ariana shares her advice on how to set realistic yet ambitious goals. Sleep is just one facet of training. If you're interested in learning more about all five facets of training, check out the Nike Training Club app, where you'll find unlimited free workouts and holistic guidance from Nike trainers. I like it because when I don't have enough time to get to the gym, there's workouts from 5 minutes all the way to an hour. Also, if you don't have enough time to get to the gym, the app has great workouts you can do from home, a hotel room, or anywhere you have space to move around. Download it now on both Android and iOS.
I've been in the weeds, so to speak, as a scientist working with athletes, but it's really been great for me to see, coming from my world, to see the rest of the business world catching on now as well. And I think the sharing of information is becoming so much easier. Before it was, you know, relegated to textbooks and, you know, studies, but now everything is available online. So when you think about that, who has the time to filter through all of that research to get an understanding of what is meaningful for me or everybody or those around me? So with athletes, it's one thing to get them in front of the information and present it to them. It's another thing to make that lasting change, which I think you've talked about it before. You and I have talked about it offline about the micro steps. Can you talk a little bit about the micro steps to change? Because I think that is massive.
Yes. So we describe our mission as helping people going from what they know they should be doing to actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all know we shouldn't be eating sugar, and we all know we should be exercising, and we all know we should be sleeping more. So the knowledge is just only a small piece of the puzzle.
The information's there, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I mean, we can give you more data, we can give you more science, we can give you more role models. We need to move you from knowing what to do to doing it. And the key, according to all the latest neuroscience, is micro steps of behavior change. It's basically small, incremental, daily steps that are going to become sustainable, that are going to become habits, that are going to become part of your daily routine. Like, if your diet is like starving yourself for 3 days, it's not going to be sustainable. If your diet is cutting out dessert at dinner, okay, you have it at lunch, or whatever it is, just a micro step. We want you to work each micro step until it becomes part of your daily ritual, until it becomes like driving. You know, you can do it automatically, and then you add another micro step. And that is sustainable behavior change. And we have all the evidence that it works.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it sounds amazing. How does that come to life through what you guys are offering? Is it through an app, or how does it?
So it comes to life both through live workshops, because we still believe in live, and through digital products. We have a Pathways app, because our behavior change is broken down into pathways, which are broken down into journeys, which are broken down into micro steps. Mm-hmm.
I think that's with the micro steps too, or what I love about it is for, because I've already started incorporating some of it with some of my athletes, and it's amazing how many other areas in life it can work too, right? So it's not just in sleep or nutrition or in starting your training routine, but in, if you wanted to read a certain amount of pages of a book a day, or, you know, just picking those micro kind of goals, mini goals, I guess, is what we found to be super effective across, even with like elite athletes.
Exactly. And then what is wonderful is that you have success building on success. Like, you achieve something every day, and that makes it much more likely that you're going to stay on it. Again, we want to always stress to people, we're not asking you to leave your job, leave your marriage,
right?
You know, move to Tahiti. And also that everything we're saying, we say it's for people in the arena. It's for people who want to be productive, to achieve, to succeed, but do it in a sustainable and joyful way. I keep talking about joy because that's really important to me. You know, we have one life.
Yeah.
And our life should not just be about getting things done. It should also be about bringing joy and fulfillment and happiness into our lives and our relationships. And if we don't do that, I don't think we're really succeeding.
Yeah. So getting into your personal routine, on any given day, what does your nutrition and exercise routine look like?
So, first of all, on the nutrition front, I have completely cut out sugar and all processed foods. I think these are the two key things in any diet, you know. So I have now literally trained myself. It didn't happen overnight, but I've trained myself that I do, in my mind, see them as poisons.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think I think at some point they're going to be looked at as smoking is. In like the next 10 years, I think it'll be looked at as smoking is, yeah.
On exercise, I have a minimum of 30 minutes on my stationary bike, which is in my home. So if I do nothing else, I do that.
Yeah.
And a few yoga stretches. And then 3 to 4 times a week, I have a full workout. And here's one thing I learned about myself. I'm extremely disciplined in many areas of my life, but not when it comes to showing up at the gym. So yeah. I have a trainer who comes to me. It may seem like a luxury, but hey, I'd rather have that than buy another thing, because it's critical for my health. And because if the trainer didn't show up, I might not do the full hour workout with weights, etc.
Yeah, I talk to athletes all the time about it, where they struggle in the off season to invest in their body. I don't want to work with a chef, it's just too expensive, or massage therapist, but they'll go out and buy an expensive watch or a nice car. I'm like, this is going to take you, your body's going to take you so much further than any car or any watch can take you. And yet, you know, you have to invest in your body in order, if you want it to perform at the level you expect it to. And for people that are listening, if you just saved $5 every single day that you spend on your expensive coffee over the course of the month, you would easily be able to afford a personal trainer to work with you that will then, that investment in your body and in your life will make such a huge difference and change. You know, there's apps out there, Nike Training Club app, going to plug it, but we have an app where free workouts. I mean, there's ways to do it. It's just a matter of people, I think, understanding that the investment that they make in their body is more important than anything else they do. I mean,
exactly. Find your way.
Yeah. So you a lot of times gloss over in your story about, you mention it, but you talk about your childhood growing up in a small apartment in Greece, to where you talked about having a picture of Cambridge that you saw, that, and you decided at that point that's where you wanted to go to school. And for me, that was, I think, I put together a lot of things I hear from different people at the top of their game, right? When it comes to different athletes like Serena Williams or other athletes who are, have reached the pinnacle, they've done something at a very young age to where they've had a vision to where they wanted to get, and nothing was going to stop them. They did it through visual aid, so the visualization of seeing Cambridge and you ending up there. But can you talk to a little bit about how you kind of were able to go from where you came from to where you are today?
I feel it's amazingly important if you have even one person who believes in you. And I had my mother. I was very lucky, literally. Everybody I showed that picture to in my world, my father, my friends, my teachers said, don't be ridiculous. I'm not exaggerating.
Really?
They said, you know, you don't speak English. you don't have any money. And you want to get into a university where it's really hard for English girls to get into and English boys. But my mother said, let's find out how we can get you into Cambridge. And we literally investigated. We found out I could take my general certificates of education through the British Council in Athens. I could take my exam. I could apply for a scholarship. I could intensify learning English, which I had just begun. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we did all that. And there was at one point when my mother came to me and said, you know what? I just got these really cheap tickets and we can fly to London and take the train and go and see Cambridge. It wasn't like go and see anyone at Cambridge. I mean, we didn't know anybody.
Right, yeah. It's like going
it
to
was
Disneyland.
Just go, go to yeah. see Cambridge to make the visualization even more concrete.
Wow.
And, you know, I ended up getting a scholarship and getting into Cambridge. And it was definitely game-changing, because suddenly I was in another world, and my whole life changed because I saw that picture
yeah.
in the magazine.
That's incredible. And you mentioned your mom as being the one, you know, person that had your back, that supported you through that. When I first started out, I didn't start training elite level athletes off the bat. A lot of it was a couple, you know, pro athletes here and there, but a lot of young athletes, right? High school kids, middle school kids. And hearing their parents talk to them when a kid would say, hey, I have a dream to play in the NFL or the Major League Baseball one day, or be a pro soccer player. You would hear parents say, it's not possible. Like, let's be realistic. What would you say to parents out there to help them and let them understand the power of a dream and a power of, you know, having a vision, in which ways they can support that, that isn't leading them to have their kids be unrealistic, I guess?
I think it's the combination of supporting the power of a dream while at the same time making sure their child knows that they're unconditionally loved. Mm. That if they fail, you know, most people are not going to get into the NFL.
Right.
They're not going to love them any less. That the journey itself is important. It's not just the destination. And the other thing is to help them not to get discouraged. Because especially when people succeed, we kind of forget about the failures along the way. And I like to talk a lot about my failures. I like to talk a lot about my second book, which was rejected by 36 publishers, as opposed to my first book, which was commissioned. And I feel successful people need to do that, because the truth is that, as my mother used to say, failure is not the opposite of success. It's a stepping stone to
mm-hmm.
success.
Yeah. You said in an article you were interviewed talking about how in today's society, success is determined by how much money or power you have, or both, right? A lot of the NFL guys that I work with come from generally single parent homes at very, very low income. So the hard part is, though, all of their idols, everyone they see, who they look up to, drives nice cars, has nice things, and they strive, I think, to one day be in that point where they have money, where they have the means to take care of their family, buy their mom a nice house. It's difficult because their motivation to get to the point they are today was driven by attainment of not just the dream of playing in the NFL, but what comes with that, the money, right? How can we make that change with young kids, that it's not all about power and money? That's not success, right? How can we instill that at a young age to where we break that chain a little bit of money and power being the only way?
Thank you so much for asking that question. I think it is the critical question of our time. So for me, the key is to redefine success. And that's what I wrote about in Thrive, to go beyond the two metrics of money and power/status, the third metric, which is again the third leg of the stool mm-hmm. for a complete life, is well-being. First of all, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. Wisdom, if you are not connected with your own wisdom, your decisions are going to be impaired. Wonder, you know, a sense of wonder about the mystery of life, and giving. These are essential for a full life. And that's not to say anything against money or success in traditionally defined, but they are not enough. I believe profoundly that every one of us, as part of our birthright, has a place of strength, wisdom, and love in us. We all have it. We need to connect with it. And we're not going to be able to connect with if we lead our lives in a breathless way that leads to stress and burnout.
Thank you. This has been like a real privilege and honor for me, so I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. I loved it as well.
Thank you.
After talking to Ariana and hearing about her accident, I really want to emphasize the importance of recovery. When Ariana took some time to evaluate her well-being, to sleep, to recover, she became so much happier and, more importantly, healthier. And I know Ariana wasn't talking to me about training when she told me that story, but the same rules apply to training. Constantly going, going, going does not yield success. In order to see progress in our training, we need to take time to recover. Not every day at the gym should be beast mode. Even if we think we can handle intense workout after intense workout, we can't. Our nervous system takes about 48 hours on average to recover. And that's important because even if you don't physically feel the effects of the workout, your body knows it's tired. Your body gets used to that state, and you can start to plateau. So instead of working to crush every day, every single workout, it's more important to maximize your recovery days. And even when I say recovery days, I do mean also active recovery days. So whether it's a dynamic warm-up, getting on a bike for 10 minutes, yoga, flexibility or stretching, those count too. And really, it's about listening to your body. So remember, recovery isn't separate from training. It's a crucial part of it. Trained is produced by Nike Training Club Pro. To join the premier network for fitness professionals everywhere, go to nike.com/NTCPro. The best of Nike, exclusively for trainers. Next time, we'll hear from Dr. Rhonda Patrick, a biochemist, nutrition expert, and founder of the Found My Fitness blog and podcast. She'll take us through today's latest diet trends and explain why some work and others don't. See you guys then.
Consult your doctor before engaging in an exercise program of any kind, especially if you have a medical condition. Use good judgment and common sense about your own fitness level and ability when engaging in a training program. If something doesn't feel right, stop immediately and seek medical attention as necessary.